Hey, yo, what's good? Check it out. This your boy, Elder Sensei, one half of the legendary Artifacts. You are right now in tune to my man, Tim Einenkel, at the library on rapstation.com. Let's get it popping, y'all. Artifacts, please, Elder Sensei, I'm out.
Helen Keller, talking like a seller. Got a Spanish chica, Guantanamera. Ever since I've been losing control, wait a minute, y'all don't know me that long. Y'all don't know the names of my earliest songs. Y'all don't know the things I was earlier on. I just say it'll be alright. Growing up, my house broken like a pee outside. Came up from the cellar. Now y'all ain't talking shit, Helen Keller. Baking on the flow like a teller. Far from a teller, more like a tiller. Hun's gotta fill him.
My next guest writes, produces, mixes, and masters his own music. He's about to drop his latest EP, Helen Keller, on May 19th. He's Queens, New York MC. Code is clap, and I want to welcome him to the library with Tim Einenkel on rapstation.com.
Thank you, man.
Cool. Thanks for being here.
I appreciate the opportunity. It's awesome. Thank you.
So before we get into the EP, Helen Keller, I want to ask you something you said in an interview when you were asked, why do you make music? And you responded, I make music because I have to.
Absolutely.
What did that mean? What did you mean by that?
When I'm not making music, I feel almost like a shell of myself. I feel almost inadequate, you know, like I get depressed and stuff when I'm not creating. And like for me, this music shit, I understand that it's not the get rich quick scheme that everybody thinks it is. Like I can say I'm not doing this for the money. You know, my stuff is on iTunes and all that stuff, but I've also given away just about everything I've made, you know, for free. I need to make music. It's how I express myself. And then, you know, whether it's writer's block or I'm not creating, I don't feel complete. You know, I walk around upset and angry, and I'm just not myself. I need to do this.
Is it something that you, I mean, is the goal for you to create, to feel complete, to create a song a day, or is it just the act of starting some project or a track?
It's got to be organic. You know, when I was younger, I used to write every day. And, you know, I don't really write verses and stuff just to write anymore. You know, I need to sit down with beats. You know, when I do write, it's everything is like I approach a track melodic. And usually I ride the bass line, you know, and I treat one thing I've learned. I've been doing this a long time. And the difference now, is that I'm treating my vocals like an instrument. And when people would say that before, I didn't understand it, you know. But yeah, that's the difference. So yeah, man, when I write, I need the production behind me. And I like creating a feel, a mood, you know, an aura. It's not really about just writing bars for me. I like more than writing bars. I like writing music. You know, I was in a rock band for 6 years, and it's all about the music. I when I'm writing, I can see the final version of the song in my head already. You know, I know where my ad libs are gonna go. I know what effects I'm gonna put on certain words as soon as I'm writing them. You know, so I see. It's like a vision. And bringing that vision to life, it's awesome. And then when I'm done with a song, it's like, holy shit, you know? It's incredible. It's incredible.
You mentioned you were in a rock band, you know, I guess a rock, punk, hip-hop, alternative band.
Yeah.
When you were younger. So why ultimately, what drew you, I guess, to hip-hop culture and rap music? Why did you use that or that genre as your outlet?
Well, I always wanted to be in a band when I was younger. And then, and my brother would put me on to music when I was younger. You know, like I remember when Onyx Back the Fuck Up came out and I heard it, or when 36 Chambers came out, I was like, you know, I never really heard nothing like that before. And it was dope, but it wasn't like love. Like I would love it, but I didn't understand it. I would recite Wu-Tang lyrics and fuck up all the lyrics, you know, like everything. I didn't understand it, you know, and I was just like a rock and roll kid. I grew up on classic rock, which grew into grunge. And then finally I started getting into hip hop a little more. I started writing, actually, when I first started writing, it was more like R&B, Not that I'm a singer by any means. It's just we had to write poetry in class and keep a journal, and I just didn't want to. So my way out of it was I asked my teacher in sophomore year. I asked him if I could just keep a rhyme book and write lyrics instead, and he was like, "Yeah, as long as you're writing, I don't care." So then little by little. And then I met one of my closest friends now, but I met him in high school, and that's when he started putting me on to, like, hip-hop, you know, especially, like, Raucous and a lot of underground, really backpack stuff. And, I fell in love, you know. And then I went back and studied my Illmatics and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, but I'm definitely a student, you know. I have, like, so many CDs packed in the closet now. And, I went back, and then when I finally fell in love with hip-hop, I just had to do some homework on it, you know?
I also read that you knew you wanted to make a career out of this when you heard Common and Sadat's 199.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned Ruckus.
That Soundbombing album was... The Soundbombing 2 was, like, honestly, nobody talks about it, but I feel like that's, like, one of the best hip-hop albums I ever heard to this day. You know, and most times, like, compilations never really amazing.
Right.
But that was incredible, you know? And that's, like, when I started hearing Mos Def and Pharoah Monch and Internal Affairs, the Pharoah Monch album, or Mos Def, Black on Both Sides, like, or Reflection Eternal and Black Star, man, I still listen to the Black Star album. They're like all these around the same time I heard 1999, and it was just incredible. I was like, it was like a whole different world to me, you know. And it's like, you know, and a whole different world to discover, because, you know, this the hip hop's been going on forever, you know, and I'm the latecomer here. So, and it was incredible to see all this music, and yeah, man, that whole Soundbombing project was incredible. I was like, holy shit. And then Common, I started listening to his further back music, you know, to Can I Borrow a Dollar and Resurrection and One Day It All Makes Sense. I have every one, you know, and I was like, wow, Common is incredible, you know. It was like life-changing experience to hear that song. Like that production, high tech, it was like, whoa. It's crazy.
One thing that's, many things, but one of the things that's pretty incredible about what you do is you, like I mentioned, you produce, you mix, you write, you master your own music. What are some of the advantages to doing that, but what do you think are some of the disadvantages to doing that?
Well, I don't produce like I used to. Most of the times, I'm rocking over a producer's beats. But I do all my own executive production, you know, like, sometimes most of the time my producers will give me the stems and I'll build these songs, you know. The advantage is that the songs usually come out the way I want them to sound, you know. It's like when I first started doing this, I feel like, the music never sounded the way I wanted to. You know, and it was even in like the infancy stages of me having these visions of putting these songs together, but it still never came out the way I wanted it to. And it's cool. Like, you know, when I first started mixing, I sucked. But you have to, like me, I'm the type of person, I'm not a natural at anything in my life. Like the only reason why I'm good at certain things that I'm good at is because I put in the time. You know, some people, like I couldn't rap for the first... Shit, man. I mean, honestly, anything before like 2012 for me is like kind of horrible, you know, and I've been writing since 97.
Right. So
it takes me a while to get good at what I do. Anyway, to answer the question, man, it's just the advantages. It's I can bring my vision to life. So I'm not good at explaining things sometimes. So when I'm mixing a song or mastering a song or engineering myself, I don't have to explain it. All I have to do is draw out the picture that's in my head. The disadvantage is it probably takes me double the time that it would take somebody else. Like, I have people that I engineer for, clients and stuff, that come in, lay their vocals, and they trust me, and they just walk out. You know what I mean? Like, they'll go home, and then I'll work on it when they're not here. I don't have that advantage. Like, I wish I could clone myself sometimes, you know?
Walk out.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's just time-consuming. But it don't feel like work because I love to do it, you know? But yeah, that's the advantage is being able to do it myself.
When you're building a beat, I remember DJ Newmark from Jurassic 5 talked about, during an interview with him, he talked about producing a song for I forgot offhand, but he said that there's a feel that you get when you're like building a beat that you can't explain to really anyone, but like you just know, right? Like you're just like making a beat and then like, hey, it deserves a piano here or it deserves something, right?
I really, it's hard for me to say that because honestly, my, as far as actually producing and making, I build beats now. I don't really, man, I'm more likely to tell my producer a melody and have him build it, you know? So as far as producing and making a beat from scratch, I haven't done that in years.
Okay.
And the reason why I don't is because when I make music, it's not about the ego. You know, I used to make beats from scratch and, you know, and I would put time into it. And then one of my producers would come along and do it 10 times better. You know, and I just want to make the best music.
Right.
I'm not one of these guys that just, you know, I've seen people that rather prefer to rock over their own beats just to say, hey, I produced this. Right. You know, that's not me. I want to make the best song possible. So I really can't answer that. But, you know, when I'm writing a verse and I'm in the pocket, I know, you know, right. And then you play it back and you get chills and it's like, holy shit, you know. But yeah, you know,
yeah.
You know.
I want to turn to the EP, Helen Keller. The first track off the EP is Demons Into Diamonds, which starts out with It Ain't About How Hard You Hit, and continues with the speech from Sylvester Stallone and Rocky Balboa.
You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life, but it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take.
Why choose that speech to start out the album?
Oh, you know what is crazy? That beat was produced by 20th Letter. That's actually Domingo's brother. And he sent me a whole bunch of... Just a real quick. He sent me a beat folder, and I heard that. And when I first heard that beat, I wanted to go really melodic over it. Like, the way I approached it, I wasn't going to do it like that. And I had written the song and recorded it, and I felt like it was missing something. And I was like, yo, this needs like a dope little monologue or something in the beginning. And yeah, man, and I punched in a few ideas on YouTube, and that's what came up, excuse me, of what I was looking for. And honestly, if I sat down and wrote it myself, I couldn't have did it better. You know, it's like, because I'm not really a movie buff.
Right.
And the reason is I don't like spending time watching movies. I'd rather be creating something.
Right.
You know? So when I heard it, I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is exactly what I wanted. And the reason is because, like, I hadn't really put out music in a while. And I just felt like sometimes... people don't take responsibility, you know, and for what they do, you know, and people want to make excuses why they're not certain places and that kind of stuff. And I just felt like, you know, it was the perfect opening, like, you know, like it's time to step up and do this, you know. And everybody thinks they deserve stuff, you know, but you got to go and take it. And yeah, when I heard it, I was like, oh my God. So I chopped it up a little and I was like, well, I don't want Sylvester Stallone like that on my song. So I pitched him down a little.
Nah.
I knew people would recognize it. It's Sylvester Stallone, man. But yeah, and it just worked. It as soon as I heard it, it was like, okay, it was perfect. It was dope.
Demons Into Diamonds, also, it's the first video for the album.
We were just at the film festival last Thursday. It got accepted into the independent film festival, which was really
congratulations.
Cool.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
Thank you, man. And then they asked me to perform, which is that was dope, too. And it was cool because we were just kicking around the idea about doing a video, and the videographer, Ryan Windis, he's really talented. And... we were just kicking around the idea, like, he knew how to submit it, so he was like, yo, maybe we'll shoot a video and we'll see what happens. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. What do we got to lose, you know? And it just happened. It was just really cool. It was really cool. And I'm really proud of it. I can't wait till it comes out, you know?
And the video takes on it also takes on a boxing kind of theme, right? And
yeah.
What is, for you, is there a significance to boxing that...
No, I took a very hands-off approach on the video because Ryan had a vision and I just trusted him with it, you know? I had zero... More or less, I had zero input on the story, but the thing that's crazy is the video, it's like... It's basically how I grew up, you know, and he didn't know because Ryan don't know me from back then. But when he showed me the video, you know, I'm in it, but I didn't even know. I didn't want to know his whole vision, even when I went to shoot my parts for it, you know. And when I saw the final product, I was like, holy, this is like spot on,
right.
You know, minus the boxing. But the boxing would be equivalent to the music for me, mm-hmm. you know. And so, no, I took a hands-off approach because I like to give people their freedom. You know, if somebody comes to me for music, I like to have them trust me, you know, with my vision. Same way I do with videographers. Unless I have, like, a vision that I need to bring to life, you know?
The track Rap Stars, the hook says, never let your kids grow up to be rap stars.
Yeah.
You're a rapper.
Yeah.
So wait, what's the inspiration behind this track?
Because it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's like what I was saying before. It's like, tell your son it's a trap, y'all. Never let your kids grow up to be rap stars. Because it's like, yo, we need more doctors and people, even like journalists and people like you with some brains, like we don't need more rappers, you know? It's like we have enough rappers, you know? And also it's glorified to be something it's not. Like, you know, obviously people get rich off this shit, but, you know, 98% don't, you know? And it's just, it's a trap. It's like, you know, unless you love doing it, you know?
Right.
Like, I love doing it, but so I do it. But it's like, you know, I don't want more rappers. Like, people need to, like, let their kids grow up and go to school and all the shit our parents told us that we didn't listen to, that we should have. Like, that's what they need to be doing. But I can promise you right now it isn't friendship, maybe penmanship. Hey, raise the sales, your label making paper trails. Or even worse, when a Bobby Shmurda stays in jail. Now I don't even listen to the radio. But I know that trust is lost as far as labels go. My son be born in a different era. Doesn't mean that my shit was better. With this music, bruh, it's possible to live forever. But I promise there's much greater ways to shred this cheddar. Yeah, that's whatever. Look, I had a crazy life and hip-hop was the catalyst. Trying to make sure my little mans don't know what battles is a pay to play. Lost hope, keep them clean, balls of soap to wash them from the fraudulent hopes. I call my everything. We let them know what the facts are. The lyric, I don't usually rap like this, and I'm far from an activist, starts out the track. This track comes from your frustration with seeing negativity and racial tensions everywhere.
What purpose does this track serve for you? Does it make you want to do something, or does it kind of help you make sense of what's going on in the world, or is it just kind of like a therapy?
More therapy, you know, because honestly, I don't have any interest in marching for anything. Like, I don't want to pretend. I've been educated on struggles and stuff like that, and hardships that need to be overcome. But I mean, listen, I know this fucking country is fucked. Like, I understand that black and brown people aren't treated the same as non-black and brown people. Like, I understand. So I understand frustration, and I've been educated on certain things, but I can try and understand, but I'll never truly understand. And my thing is, all I'm trying to do with this song is I mean, it's easy for me to say, but man, I have love for certain people, regardless of what color they are, you know, and it's just a call for unity. Like, I just want people to hear that song and feel good, even if it's for 3 minutes, you know, and I feel like racial tension is everywhere, and I just really wish it wasn't. Like, it's so easy for me to sit here and say that, you know, I understand that. You know, and I didn't think I was going to change the world with the song. But I speak from the heart, even when I'm talking like a douchebag on my songs. It's coming from an honest place. And this song is from an honest place. And that's why I try to take a neutral approach to it, you know. You know, I scroll down my Facebook timeline and I see, you know, all kinds of anti-black or anti-white or anti-this or anti-that. It's like all around, you know, and I just started unfollowing everyone because I hate it. It's like, I don't agree with this, none of this, like, you know, and I mean, it's going to be a long time before people start loving each other. I don't mean loving like, oh, you know, but, you know, at least accepting. People need to accept people, whether they're different, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, at the end of the day, it's more for me. And again, it's easy for me to say, but I think it's more of a rich or poor thing, so, but, you know, but that's in my heart. Not everybody feels the same. You know, some people might think I don't even have the right to speak on stuff like this, and that's okay, you know? But yeah, it's basically preaching love and unity, at least from my heart, you know?
Were you surprised that you wrote a track like this?
Yeah, it wasn't. The thing is, I didn't want to, because it's so easy to do. It's like the trendy thing to do.
Right.
You know, I got the beat. I sat down with the beat and this is what came to me. I don't rap like this, man. I never rapped like this in my life. You know, never. We go through my catalog of songs for 3 million years ago. Right. I've never made a song like this. And I didn't want to sound like I'm riding a wave with this, you know? Just not what I do, you know? And I sat down with the beat, and it just made me feel something. And I just wanted to express it, you know? Overall, it's been positive. I'm sure some people listen to it like, fuck out of here. and that's cool, too, you know? At least they feel something.
Right.
But, no, man, I didn't want to make a song like this. And that's kind of why... I justify, like, by saying I don't usually rap like this and I'm far from an activist, because I don't want to pretend to be something I'm not, or like some kind of super conscious rapper. I'm not, you know, but this is how I felt at that moment.
Helicopter AP uses a lot. I mean, we talked about this prior to the interview, but he uses a lot of music.
Yeah.
And I heard it and I was like, all right, Otis is he's a lyricist and MC who's not afraid to silence his voice and let the music play.
Yeah.
What's the importance for you of the beat, the instrument, in your art, when you're creating it? Like, how do you measure lyrics, beat?
It's got to feel a certain way when you're done. You know, it takes a while too to like tuck away your ego, because like going back to what I was saying before, excuse me, I was in a band for a while, and you know, it takes a while to know, just shut up. It's the solo, you know. Sometimes you just want to go extra hard, but you know, as I feel like I've put in the work to try and master my craft, you know. I understand the importance of, like, sometimes you got to let it breathe, you know, and it's just, for me, it's just about creating the overall vibe. I love music, like, all kinds of music, except, like, country. I don't really, I'm not a country music fan, but other than that, man, I love music, from classical to everything, to reggae, to old school reggae, to everything, grunge, classic rock, everything. And it's just an appreciation. It's a vibe. You're painting a picture. It's really about building a mood. You know, it's all building a mood and painting a picture. you know, and it's easy to just talk over everything. That's another thing too. Like over time I learned, like, sometimes you got to chill with the ad-libs, you know. Damn. It's cool ad-libs if they mean something, but I used to just throw in ad-libs to throw in ad-libs because, like, you know, like you said, to silence yourself. Like a lot of artists, well, forget about a lot of artists. I didn't usually do that in the past. And it's got to be a comfort that you feel about your own music too, you know? You know that you're going to shine when your verses and your hooks and your bridges come on. But, you know, you have to be able to let the picture be painted, you know?
Right. Speaking of instrumentals, the last, technically the last track, Downplay, right?
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, I didn't make that. That was amazing. That Elementary made that. I love it. I thought it was incredible.
But you put it on there.
Yeah.
Without you.
And he was telling me to. He was telling me that I should do something over it. And I told him that it's a masterpiece to me. So why do I need to try and do something over it? Like it reminded me of. Oh man, I think it's December something. On
Blackwell Sides.
Yes.
I was about to ask you whether it was kind of like an ode to
it. It wasn't supposed to be. And the thing is, he Elementary, even to this day, if you ask him now, he wants me to do something over it. Like, I refuse. Like, because none of that is sampled. You know, there's a few vocal snippets in there. Those are the samples. But he played everything out. And I just feel like it's a masterpiece. You know, I refuse to do anything over it. Even in ad lib. I love it. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing piece of music.
Why choose the end of the album with that? I mean, you know, just like we're listening to you. It's a, you know, we know it's your album, but then the last thing we hear is just, it's not you. Because you obviously could have put that track wherever you wanted to. It's your album, but. Why kind of choose?
Because it's amazing. Because it's amazing. To me, it's amazing. Like, it's probably one of my favorite songs on the project, you know, and it don't even have vocals. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing piece of music. It's something that I would hear that sounds professional to me. Like, we're striving to be professional here, you know, but I still look at me like me. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that, I'm like, holy shit, this is a professional piece of music that the producer played out. And again, it goes back to the no ego. Like, it just, if it works, it works. And I just, you know, I like to give it room to breathe also. Yeah, man, I think it's amazing. I think it gives a chance for the listener to digest everything that I've said on the project, you know. It's just amazing. I love it. I can't say it enough. It's amazing. I love it.
Before we end, it would be great to kind of give the listener kind of an insight to the creation of the Helicolor EP. So, just real quickly, where did you write the majority of the EP? And then, what was the first track you wrote for the EP?
Okay, I think the first song for it was Helen Keller. It's kind of a crazy story. The producer I was just giving enormous props to, Elementary, me and him were working on an EP, and I wrote the Helen Keller joint in his studio, and it's actually the remix that's coming out on the EP. That's actually the original. So me and him had creative differences, and we split up for a while, and I took the Helen Keller song, and I gave it to the producer, Ricky Vaughn, and he built this whole song around it, you know? So I guess technically that's the first song. And he broke it down and just rebuilt the whole song around the vocals.
Wow.
But yeah, so I guess that's the first song. But most of the music was made here at the Embassies. That's what I call the studio. And yeah, yeah, it, it, yeah.
Do you have a sounding board that you kind of like, of people that you play something for prior to releasing it to the public? Like, or is it you that knows when something's kind of...
I have a few people,
final?
You know, I have a few people. The people that I send the music to when I'm done, the number is really shrunk because there's nothing that pisses me off more than sending something that I just finished that I feel great about, and then they don't reply for like 3 days, four days. Sometimes they don't hit you back at all, and you text them, and they're like, "Oh, it's great. I just didn't get back to you."
Right.
I have like groups of people, but like small groups, like two of these. I have my people. I have a few people that are real hard critics, you know, that hate everything. I have my producer Ricky, who's brilliant. He did most of the album, and he's usually the most. Me and him usually see eye to eye. Like if something isn't up to par, he'll tell me, you know. And then Elementary is another one who's honest. Basically, I just keep the people that I do have around me. I usually make sure that they're honest. It's like honest. Like if somebody thinks something is crap, I want to know.
No, it's crap.
But I want to know why it's crap, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't just say, "Oh, I don't like it." Okay, why? I don't like it. All right, well, it's not a good answer. So, yeah, I have about like 5-6 people. It used to be like 8 to 10. And now by next project, it'll probably be like 2. But, yeah, but I know. I usually know, you know? I usually know when I'm done at this point.
So what's next? I mean, this comes out, probably comes out May 19th.
Yeah.
And I hate to be that guy to ask you what's next, but...
No, there's next. I have... The next EP is done, minus a little mixing and stuff. The next EP after this one is called 40s on the Church Steps. And that basically pays homage to how I grew up. We used to meet up on the church steps and drink 40s and, you know, and that's what we did. But it's really dope. I'm excited for that one, you know. And then aside from that, I have, aside from that EP, I have like another 10 songs ready to go, you know. Like good stuff that I can release and feel good about right now if I wanted. So I'm just going to keep making music, you know. I plan to push this EP a little harder, you know, the Helen Keller. But I would also... By the end of the summer, I would like to start pushing the next one as well, you know, because there's a few songs on there that need to see the light of summer, have to.
Have you thought why the hell, out of all your projects, like, have you ever thought like why the hell, why this project is getting the most a better response, I guess, than your past ones?
I mean, I got an answer if you want an honest answer.
Sure.
Because it's the first project that I actually use a publicist for. To be honest, it's the first project that I actually put money behind. I grew up in a I always felt like the music would speak for itself, you know. If I made the music, good things are happening. Like, don't get me wrong, I've gotten some really big looks in the past, but over a whole span of a project, it kind of just comes and goes. And this, you know, every song basically has gotten dope blog coverage and I've gotten some good looks. But, you know, the film festival is all me and Ryan. But everything else, man, I got to give it up. My publicist is really, he's done a phenomenal job with this project. And I always thought that my music would speak for itself, but it's a different game.
Right.
It's just a different game. You cannot just make music if nobody really knows you. You can't just make music and put it out unless you're going viral and looking like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, some kind of clown or you have some. Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't happen that way no more, you know. I mean, my grandmother still thinks that somebody's going to see me at a show and sign me up, you know. I'm like, "Grandma, it don't work like that." But, yeah, no, I mean, I put money behind this. I put a plan behind this, you know. It's the first time I've had a real solid plan going into a project.
And this, you don't have to answer this at all. But this,
no, I will.
And this is not taking anything away from Helen Keller, but you talked about Common earlier, right?
Yeah.
You talked about his old stuff, mm-hmm. talked about what it, you know. Would it all make sense? Kind of our dollar resurrection. A lot of people started listening to Common with like Electric Circus or the B album, right?
Yeah, B was incredible.
And B's a great album, but I always also felt like I wish he got recognized with Resurrection as the album, right? Like that was like, you know,
yeah, Resurrection's amazing.
But is there like for you with, I think the new listeners, the new fans you're going to create with Helen Keller, is there something that you would go to them, all right, you like Helen Keller, check out song from what song or what album would you want them to check out?
Last year I put out an Embassies EP. I call it Embassies, and the reason why I called it that, I had a week off from work, and I sat home and I was telling you this before the interview, and we produced, wrote, mixed, mastered a whole EP and put it out in a week. And honestly, it's incredible. Like, to do it all in a week, you know, it's crazy because I was going to do it. I was very ambitious. I said I was going to do it in a weekend. And then my producer, Ricky Vaughn, he hit me up. He's like, yo, bro, no way. I was like, all right. He goes, do you have beats for this project that you're going to put out in a week? I was like, no. And so I just started writing, and he just started filling my email, my inbox up with beats. And I was like, holy shit. And it just came to work. Like, honestly, this project is like, I mean, I'm not supposed to say this because Helen Keller's the new stuff, but it's incredible. Mm-hmm. I really feel like it's incredible. It paints a picture, and it's called Embassies because I didn't leave this room for a whole week. Wow. And I was and it's named after the studio, you know. I encourage people to check that out. You know, the only place I can put it up is Bandcamp because it's so sample heavy. All right. But yeah, otisclap.bandcamp.com if you want to hear that. It's incredible. I'll give you the NBC's EP after the interview or whatever. I think you're going to dig it. It's good. Yeah, that's the project. That's the one.
May 19th.
Yeah, May 19th. Keller comes out. Yes.
Otis Clab, thank you so much for joining me in the library at TimMonicalRapStation.com.
Yes. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it. Cool. And this was a dope interview.
Cool. Thank
you're not
you.
Asking me like horrible questions. This is like a really good interview.
Thank you,
brother. Thank you.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you wanna be because of him or her or anybody.
I turned my demons into diamonds. Y'all was probably riding high on the fact that I be wildin', but that's in the past like bygones. That iron lion's iron shit. Whenever I be iron shit, if I really try to make it minor shit, silence them. Mad I'm cussing on stage. At least they feeling something on stage. At least I made them feel the repercussions of my rage. Fuck, it's not a game. Fuck, it never was, and I ain't playing. Get high like a Dutch, cause cops hating me just as much. They ain't heard me in a while, probably thought I gave up. Especially when the wind was so close to my clutch. But if you know me, you know I ain't a quitter. Cause even when I'm hunting, keep my eye on the dinner. Yo, this hiatus, y'all was sitting back waiting so that when I come back, I solidify greatness. Hit the stew, let it simmer. Nowadays, all these bitches getting here is ice in the winter. I turn water into wine, quarters into dimes. Your daughter's on the line, taking orders all the time. Have the last laugh like I never got the joke. Wrap my whole catalog under oath. I ain't shallow as you thought, deeper on the page. So if you're taking stabs, you gon' need a deeper blade. This that old New York razor blade in the pocket. Send the letters up north, check the numbers on the docket. Around the same time, I would give this shit a try. Biggie was alive, he ain't even died yet. Made so many songs, I could document my progress. Promoters now look at us like objects. Even when I wasn't popping, still had fans in the concert. Wasn't getting paid dues to the process. Da 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 da. Rappers nowadays straight garbage.